Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Protestant, Catholic or Anglican? Just 50 years ago, that was pretty much the extent of religious diversity in Australia. And these days, while we've got a lot more religious variety, far fewer of us identify as religious at all. But interestingly, an increasing number of those Australians who don't tick the religious box in the national census still regard themselves as spiritual. So what does this all mean? Emma Quilty, Jonathan Murphy and Nikki Janks all regard themselves as spiritual, but in ways that you might not expect. Emma, let's go to you first because it is Halloween. We just played Michael Jackson's Thriller. You are a witch. Amazing. How do people respond when you tell them that? Just like me, you're saying, amazing. Yeah. What do they say?
It's amazing, followed by questions about Harry Potter, Sabrina, Buffy, you know, what are the kinds of things that you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do they then ask more deeply about your practice?
Sometimes, if they want to know more and if they're kind of on that spiritual journey themselves, they're kind of, you know, questioning and finding out what's out there.
Yeah. Well, what about do you feel that witchcraft is misunderstood a little? Is popular culture, those television shows that you mentioned, are they to blame?
I wouldn't say they're to blame. They're kind of opening up the conversation. So television and film, they're really representations and they can only go so far. So that's where I kind of see my role as a witchy anthropologist is to kind of fill in those gaps and fill in those stories with real people's kind of lived experience.
What does a witchy anthropologist do?
We come in and we make trouble and we make people feel uncomfortable and that's always fun. We always, ask uncomfortable questions about lots of different things about feminism, about religion, spirituality, class. We're just kind of across all of the things. And then on top of that, I have this kind of witchy lens where I'm always looking at things that are kind of slightly, you know, to the left, to the queer kind of angle.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you're doing your PhD on young witches in Yes. Australia. What are you finding amongst that group?
I'm finding that they're a far more complicated group than first anticipated. So when I started my research, I did the big literature review and they were kind of homogenised. This is kind of, they're the young people, they watch Buffy, they buy a book and that's how they kind of get into witchcraft. And what I'm finding is their journeys to witchcraft are far more complex and their identities as witches are a lot more complicated than that as well.
Okay, in what way?
So in witchcraft, there's a lot of emphasis on ancestor worship. So obviously every witch is going to have a different ancestral line. So they're going to have Russian or Scandinavian or Balinese heritage. And what that looks like in their practice is obviously going to differ witch to witch.
Yeah. And you've got all your teeth and you're not wearing a hat with a point on it and you don't look scary at all, which is, are you the new gen of witches? Do we have to revitalise what we think witchcraft is?
I think it's definitely time that we open the conversation up again. I think in the 90s, people like Fiona Horn were really great in bringing it to the fore and making it not so much mainstream but a bit more understandable.
And she was a musician originally in the band Def FX, wasn't she?
Yeah,
that were quite popular in the 90s. And then she sent herself off to America where she's become quite a mainstream author on witchcraft.
Yeah, so a lot of the literature from the 90s, kind of the mainstream pop culture literature, spoke about white witchcraft, which obviously in an age of intersectionalism and race, we can't, you know, that's not something we would prefer to use. I think nowadays we need to look at witchcraft through a more complicated and refracted lens. So Sabrina, the new TV series, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, has been really good at doing that. Sabrina has a very eclectic and varied group of friends. It's not kind of a very Caucasian high school situation. They're dealing with issues about queerness and bullying, gender neutrality, ethnicity.
So it's a way to navigate the world.
Yeah, that's exactly
and
right.
And we are discussing spiritual practice, and this is my last question before I move on to my other guests. But in what way is witchcraft a spiritual practice?
So witchcraft is a spiritual practice of the body and of the earth. So it's not a spiritual practice or religious set of beliefs that looks at preparing for the afterlife. It's something that is very this worldly, I guess is the best way you could talk about it.
Okay.
And it's about getting back into the body and resacralizing the body, particularly the feminine body.
Okay, great. Now, Jonathan, hello to Jonathan, who's been waiting patiently. Not a witch, sadly, but you are a yoga practitioner.
I am,
who
yes.
sees yoga as much more than just a way to get fit. So in what way is yoga a spiritual practice then?
Well, I would say first and foremost, yoga is a spiritual practice, but it's just that in the West, the physical side, you know, what most people relate to is the asanas, they've become probably more popular than they have in the East. But essentially, at its core, yoga is first and foremost a spiritual practice, which uses the body as a tool to help the devotee meditate. Because the yogis found, you know, millennia ago that, you know, an unsound body was a hindrance to meditation. So they developed these certain practices in Hatha yoga.
That's true because you can't sit unless your body is trained.
No, and the mind, if the body can't sit still, the mind will just keep getting drawn back to the body and the aches and then that's a hindrance to meditation.
That's not meditation at all, is it? Just thinking about what aches and pains you?
Yeah, and the first prerequisite in meditation is to be able to sit still. And the word asana translates as, you know, firm and steady seat. So just simply the ability to sit still, and then we move into the deeper practices of pranayama and meditation and sense withdrawal and so on. But in the West, you know, I can understand most people just drawn to it from, you know, flexibility, strength, and that all has its purpose. You know, it's all about meeting people where they're at. But just for the, you know, for the listeners, you know, that's only a hair of the body of yoga. It's not... it's not the goal, you know, they're saying, do not mistake the technique for the goal.
Okay. Do you think, though, Jonathan, that most people who go to weekly yoga classes are aware of that deep spiritual tradition of yoga? I look at Instagram posts, hashtag namaste, hashtag blessed, all of that. Is this the awareness of the spiritual tradition of yoga carrying across to those folk?
Depends on the teacher that I experience and you know, I guess what school they end up in.
Yeah.
For me, I came through, I was reading a lot on, you know, what I would say authentic yoga text in my teens, but I didn't start to practice yoga as a, you know, what we know today until probably my mid-20s. And I was just very fortunate. The first class that I experienced was with a lady who was, she lived as a yogic nun in India, and she was, you know, well-trained, trained as a, you know, nun for 12 years. And then at the end of that first class, you know, they go through the asana and the savasana and, you know, meditation and pranayama. And at the end of it, for the first time in my life, I'd felt this amazing deep peace that was quite profound. And I would say spiritual, but at the same time, my body and my energy felt alive. And I'd never experienced the two together. I'd always felt high energy. I was quite fit and the like, but I'd never associated this deep spiritual peace with that, and so I was hooked.
There you go.
But, you know, she was, you know, that's I feel sad because a lot of people don't get to experience that, and that's because of the training of the teacher. They haven't, you know, they're not experiencing a qualified teacher.
So
I guess
look for a good teacher, says Jonathan.
First and foremost,
Nikki, your spirituality is not dissimilar to Jonathan's in that you're a great believer in the power of meditation. Tell me about your path to meditation. I'm so envious of people who can meditate. Tell me about your path.
So I started meditating 8 years ago. I was studying at the time psychology, and I was really overcome by the pressure and competition and then of trying to get a distinction average to get into honours and masters. And I was really quite anxious, not knowing that that's what it was, that it was, you know, perhaps anxiety. And I came across meditation online. And I'd always thought, like you, that meditation was really difficult and you needed to almost have a still mind in order to meditate. But I came across a different technique and a different style, which was more effortless and really easy. Anyone can do it. You can do it anywhere. And so I started meditating regularly, twice a day, every day. And it just had such a profound impact on my life. First of all, of course, in terms of my stress levels and my anxiety levels. But then that whole, as you said, spiritual side started to take place. Like I started asking more of the important questions in life, and my relationship to others started to improve, my capacity for empathy and compassion, my relationship with myself. And yeah, and I realized it was so much more than just a stress reduction technique.
Great. I need to start tomorrow, obviously. I'm joined by Nikki Jenks, Emma Quilty and Jonathan Murphy, and we are talking about spirituality today. All of you, to an extent, had religious upbringings. Emma and Jonathan, Catholic, Nikki, Jewish. Did your prior religious understanding help shape or inform your current spiritual beliefs?
Yes. So for me, growing up, going to a Jewish school, going to Jewish camps, that was the first time that I experienced a sense of spirituality, that there was, you know, maybe something bigger than myself, or just the connection with other people and having that really deep connection to myself and others. So I think I've always loved that, and I've always been seeking that in other ways. For me, those particular religious practices and perhaps the rigidity of it didn't really work for me. I still consider myself traditional, and I love my Jewish identity, but I don't observe the actual dietary laws and keeping the Sabbath and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually had quite the opposite with my Catholic upbringing. I felt a deep sense of disconnection from the people around me. So I guess I've always been a bit of a troublemaker. And even in kindergarten at Catholic school, I was asking too many questions, you know, about Mary and about Jesus. And, it came from that sense of questioning and critical thinking, even at five, that I decided to leave the church, which was a problem for my parents since they'd already sent me to a Catholic school. Yeah. And we had to go to church, you know, every week. But that's when I kind of felt my earliest sense of feminism really start to blossom. I was kind of looking around me and seeing all of this inequity amongst the priests and the nuns and the altar girls and altar boys. And, yeah, it just infuriated me. And I think that rage kind of led me to the witch.
I want to talk to you about witchcraft and feminism as well.
Yes.
And why they're intrinsically linked. But Jonathan, tell me, do your prior religious understandings help shape and inform your current spiritual beliefs?
I guess I'm similar to the other guest. I was raised in quite a strict Catholic school. I mean, I went to a convent when I was in primary school. I'm 51, so we're talking like, you know, the early 70s. And same in primary school, you know, I would question, you know, and I'm, you know, my last name's Murphy, I come from a long Irish, you know, Catholic background, and I would have arguments, you know, from an early age of just ideals that just didn't sit right within my heart. You know, I did believe a lot of what they, you know, was taught, but, you know, the people teaching, there was just such contradiction in, you know, and, you know, washing my mouth out with soap and the beatings and all the rest of it. So it used to make me question, oh, no, it's all right, I'm a Reformed Catholic now.
Have you, though, have you all thrown out the window everything that those other religions offer? I'm interested in this because obviously, and this is something for all of you, that religion still plays a big role here in Australia and provides great meaning and comfort for many Australians. So I'd love to know your perspective on that.
I haven't thrown personally, you know, I believe all religions have, you know, a lot of inherent truths that are universal. But in saying that, sometimes, you know, man's interpretations of that and, you know, and the, you know, they get rewritten over time and, you know, but I believe the core teachings of all religions are based in truth. But, you know, the interpretations, I've found personally, like the teachings of yoga, just to be at one with most religions myself.
Nikki and Emma, what are your thoughts on that, about the core of religions being being at, well, religion being at the core of all belief?
I think this is my personal standpoint on religion, is that on an individual level, it can really help people to find themselves and to understand their place in the world and to find a sense of meaning. On a broader structural level, I think religion is a really easy tool for powerful people to use to exploit people. And I think with the Royal Commission coming out, we're seeing how deep that corruption has gone. So while I do believe in the freedom of religion and freedom from religion, I also think that all religions should be open to criticism. And yeah, that's my take on it. Religion is the opium of the people.
Nikki, your thoughts?
Yeah, so ultimately I think that there's religion and then there's spirituality. And within religion there is that spiritual aspect inside to it, but often I think people can get caught up with the rigidity and the laws. And when you have a look at all religions, ultimately they are saying the same thing. And when you start to look at that spiritual side of it, that's where I think, you know, I connect a lot more to it. And I think people in Australia are also starting to connect more to that spiritual lens and aspect of it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the big ones, though. In what ways do your current spiritual practices answer the big questions, ones about life that traditionally religion would normally answer, like the, you know, the basics? Why are we here? How should we live our lives? You know, what's the purpose of life? Where do we go when we die? All that business.
Yeah. I'm happy to speak to this. Yeah. I take a bit of an absurdist approach to this, and I think it's come out of my witchy and academic side. I don't think there is any meaning to life or that there is anything after death. I think that once you get over that realization and you accept that realization that death is inevitable, that makes life all the more meaningful and powerful, because all that matters is what we're doing right now, because this is it.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. How about you, Nikki?
So I think that, so for me, my meditation practice has me see that I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions, I'm not even my body, but there is something there that makes us human and makes us special, and that is the spirit, so to speak. And meditating has me connect to that deeper side and in deeper place inside of myself.
Okay. Jonathan?
Yeah, similar beliefs. I do believe that there is life after death. And, you know, a lot of yoga.
That is true.
Philosophy adheres to that. I also believe that we don't just live one life. I do believe in reincarnation. And, you know, I had a little epiphany a few years ago. You know, a lot of people don't, especially in the Catholic Church, and or in a lot of religions, don't adhere to reincarnation because it, you know, it doesn't, you know, follow a lot of the teachings in the Bible. But, you know, the fact that we've already incarnated, you know, not many things that I know of in the universe aren't duplicated. And, you know, the fact that this consciousness, mind, has incarnated into this body, into this world, like, you know, it's already happened once. So why is it so hard to understand that this doesn't happen again? To me, it just makes sense. You know, the different personalities, the different gifts, you know, are from our previous lives. And, you know, what is the meaning of life? I don't know. You know,
too,
you know,
big for us, Jonathan.
You know, in yoga, we would say, you know, the big G word is, you know, enlightenment. But I agree with what the other participants are saying. Is, you know, it's, you know, about adhering to, you know, getting the best from this life.
That's right. Opening it up to your own interpretation. This has been fascinating and enlightening and all of those things. Can we touch on really, really quickly witchcraft and feminism with you, Emma Quilty?
Yes, absolutely.
What's the link? Is it because witches or witchcrafters have often been persecuted in history?
Yeah, I think with alongside the legacy of persecution, you just see the witch in popular culture now, not just in Sabrina and Charm, but she's always the antagonist in all of the horror movies. Mm. She's always this horrific, horrific woman. And I think part of that can be used. And I think witches, you know, currently practicing witches do use that in a way. I know I definitely do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in my article, I was talking about liberal feminism. And while that's really, really necessary in terms of allyship and things like that, there's a risk that we turn into apologists. Whereas with radical feminism, yeah, I think we need to embrace that kind of fear and turn it into power.
This, as I said, has been fascinating and enlightening, and I feel like I need to do some meditating after this as well, Nikki, because you've brought a certain amount of zen into the studio as well. I love it. Thank you so much for joining me, all three of you. Emma Quilty from Newcastle University, Nikki Jenks, co-founder of Centered Meditation, and Jonathan Murphy, who's the founder of Yoga Fest.